Palestinian resistance fighters engage in heavy fighting with Israeli soldiers in the Gaza Strip, destroying 24 of their armored vehicles in the south and north of the territory. The Palestinian Health Ministry says the Israeli onslaught on Gaza has claimed more than 350 lives in the past day, raising the death toll to nearly 17,200. And Israel approves plans to build nearly 2,000 new settler units in the occupied East Al-Quds amid its relentless strikes against the besieged Gaza Strip. Well, welcome to our studio here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. More than 2 months into Israel's deadliest onslaught on the Gaza Strip, the regime relentlessly continues with its all-out aggression, leaving over 17,000 Palestinians dead. Regime forces have massacred a Palestinian family in their latest attack on a school for refugees near the Indonesian hospital north of the coastal strip. Dozens of Palestinians have also been killed in fresh airstrikes on the southern cities of Khan Yunis and Rafah. Israeli warplanes also hit two homes in the Al-Maghazi refugee camp in central Gaza, leaving nearly 30 people dead. Meanwhile, on the ground, heavy fighting is raging in several cities, including Khan Yunis. Hamas says it has killed several Israeli troops in the latest battles, bringing the total death toll in the Israeli military since the ground operation to 90. The resistance group has also destroyed 24 military vehicles in Khan Yunis and the northern city of Beit Lahia. Palestinians sifted through the rubble to search for casualties after Israeli warplanes struck a residential area in the southern Gaza town of Rafah late Wednesday. Let's take a listen to eyewitness accounts of indiscriminate Israeli strikes on the town.
There were three big explosions. Then we saw a strike in the apartment up there. It was my brother's apartment. It was completely destroyed. A large number of people were martyred and wounded. Most of them were children and women.
It was a direct hit. People were walking on the street. There was no warning. We didn't see anything except a strike on our homes without any warning.
We are from Al-Hobi family in Rafah. We were surprised by the attack. The house was targeted by three rockets. They targeted women and children and displaced Palestinians. They were told the south would be safe. The south is supposed to be safe. Our guests were displaced from Hamad to Rafah and they were all killed. This is the occupation and its actions.
Israel's genocidal onslaughts on Gaza have forced Palestinians to live in squalid tent camps without basic necessities. Take a listen to some Palestinians telling about the dire situation in those camps.
The conditions in the camps are extremely challenging. When the rains start to fall, we rush to cover the tent, trying to stop water infiltration. The situation is extremely difficult as we have been striving to secure food, water, and firewood. We struggle to bring firewood to set a fire to cook food for our children and warm them. We're struggling with another war in addition to the ongoing war. It's a battle for survival to secure food and water and to be able to go on. What can we do? It's a life imposed on us. God willing, this war ends and a permanent, not temporary, ceasefire is to be applied so that we can go back home and live even honorable, which is much better than a life of humiliation. Our situation has been compounded by rocketing prices that were tripled.
Winter is harder than this ongoing war where we live inside tents, a primordial life. We are living like our ancestors lived before 1948. Everyone is struggling due to the winter, and the tents are already submerged. We're trying to adapt to our current situation as much as we can. Hopefully, we can return to our homes and live a better life. This is all we can say.
The United Nations World Food Program says Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are facing alarming levels of hunger due to a lack of food. In a report, the UN agency said that at least 97% of households in northern Gaza have inadequate food consumption, with 9 out of 10 people going one full day and night without food. This is while southern Gaza has also been experiencing acute food shortages, with a third of households said to be suffering from severe or very severe hunger. Since the onset of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, over 1,200 trucks carrying food aid have entered the besieged Palestinian territory. But WFP, in its report, says 100 trucks with food are needed each day to meet the basic needs of the civilian population in Gaza. In a rare move, the UN Secretary General has invoked what is widely considered to be the most powerful diplomatic tool to turn the attention of the Security Council toward the humanitarian crisis in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Given the scale of the loss of human life in Gaza and in Israel in such a short amount of time, the Secretary General has today delivered a letter to the President of the Security Council invoking Article 99 of the Charter of the United Nations. This is the first time that Antonio Guterres has done this since he became Secretary General in 2017. Article 99 states, and I quote, that the Secretary General may bring to the attention of the Security Council any matter in his opinion that may threaten the maintenance of international peace and security. In the letter, which has been shared with you, the Secretary General urges the members of the Security Council to press to avert a humanitarian catastrophe, and he appeals for a humanitarian ceasefire to be declared.
In the letter, Antonio Guterres calls on the Security Council, as well as the international community, to use all available means to stop Israel's massacre of Palestinians. Response to Guterres' letter, the EU Foreign Policy Chief, Joseph Borrell, has urged the European members of the 15-member Council to immediately prevent a full collapse of the humanitarian situation in Gaza. Also, a short draft resolution was circulated to Council members by the United Arab Emirates, demanding an immediate ceasefire, while expressing grave concern over the situation in the Palestinian territory. Moving on, Iran has welcomed the move by the UN Secretary General to formally warn the Security Council of the global threat from Israel's onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman cited the letter from Antonio Guterres to the Security Council, saying the Israeli massacre of civilians and the destruction of civilian infrastructure in Gaza threatens regional stability. Nasser Kanani turned the spotlight on the genocide and war crimes Israel is committing in Gaza. He said the so-called humanitarian pauses do not end Israel's hostilities. In actual fact, and only embolden the occupiers to keep their war crimes. Kanani said the Security Council must take effective immediate action to push Israel to stop the war in Gaza and its hostilities in the occupied West Bank and elsewhere. Israeli forces have carried out new raids across the occupied West Bank. That has resulted in clashes with Palestinians at several places. Regime troops fired tear gas and rubber bullets at Palestinian youths during the clashes. Earlier, they raided several neighborhoods, which resulted in the death of one Palestinian. Several others were injured and dozens were arrested as well. The Israeli military also deployed dozens of armored vehicles while entering the city of Tulkarm and laying siege to the Nur Shams refugee camp. The occupying regime has stepped up its deadly attacks across the West Bank since October 7. That is when Israel launched a genocidal onslaught against the people in the besieged Gaza Strip. Over 260 Palestinians have been killed in the occupied territories since then. Israel has approved plans to build 1,738 new settler units in the occupied East Al-Quds amid the regime's genocidal onslaught against the besieged Gaza Strip. Peace Now, which is an Israel-based NGO, said the new settler units will effectively obstruct the last remaining corridor connecting two major Palestinian neighborhoods in East Al-Quds with the rest of the city. It added that the plan makes the creation of a Palestinian urban continuum in East Al-Quds practically impossible. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry said on Tuesday that Israel has taken advantage of international concerns over the war in Gaza to approve the construction of the new settlements. The ministry added that the regime plans to flood outlets with settlements and settlers to separate the city from its Palestinian surroundings. All Israeli settlements are considered illegal under international law as they have been constructed on occupied land. Salina Khan is an independent journalist who joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to the program, Salina Khan. Taking a look at, first of all, and it's really hard to be talking about this after 2 months that it's continued, and this is the number of Palestinians that have been murdered, which is now standing at over 17,000. And we have, of course, the number that have been injured. That stands at around 60,000. And then you have the ones that are under the rubble, which are still unaccounted for. That is set to be around 10,000. And the World Health Organization has said the diseases are going to result in more deaths than the actual figures that have been killed so far. What do you think of these apocalyptic numbers that that you're hearing?
Thank you, first of all, for inviting me. And these numbers are atrocious. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what we as Muslims in the U.S. are trying to do. The problem is that just like Palestine needs to be liberated, our mosques in the U.S. also need to be liberated. 90% of mosques in the U.S. are occupied right now, and it's really hard to effectively do anything for the Palestinians. The imams and the boards that are part of the mosques, are they all beholden to the U.S. government, which we all know is the biggest ally and supporter of the Zionist regime. But Biden said if there was no Israel, we'd have to create it, obviously to accomplish the American objectives in the region. So these imams at the mosque, not only do they not guide the Muslims correctly as to how we who are living in the belly of the Zionist support system should stop U.S. support for Israel, but some actually are trying to stop their communities from actions that will help Palestinians, which is very, very sad and tragic. And to understand this better, I think we need to go back to 9/11 and the war on terror and how those events affected the imams and mosques in the U.S. They were afraid of being labeled terrorists and deported or thrown into jail. So Muslim imams in general adopted the strategy of complete radio silence on U.S. foreign policy. For several years, they didn't even mention anything that was happening. But then the kids, they needed guidance, and they started looking for this guidance on the internet and were getting misled, putting the imams of the mosque they attended in hot water. So an example is the so-called Nigerian underwear bomber, for example. The mosque realized that they cannot be completely silent anymore. So if we fast forward to today, and we're seeing this whole-scale massacre of the Palestinians, it's forced the imams and the Muslim organizations, they have to speak out, they just can't be silent anymore. The videos and information on social media means everybody knows what's happening, and they're looking for the Muslim leadership for guidance on how they should help. So while the imams are speaking up, and that's a good start, them repeating everything that we already see on social media isn't enough. The guidance most mosques have been giving to us is to dua for the Palestinians. Get up in the middle of the night, do the Hajj prayer, and do dua. The more activist type of imams add that we should share information on social media and attend protests and rallies. Of course, this is important, but it's not enough. The massacre continues even after millions of people have been attending rallies. There was an Israeli education official who gave a speech at a university in the U.S. some years back, and he said, we don't care about people coming to the streets to rally. They do this for about 6 to 8 weeks, and then go home, and we're still here. So there's a concept of infaq in the Quran, which is getting what is needed to who needs it when they need it. So in this context, we would mean that, what do the Palestinians need from us now? We are at that 8-week mark now. Will the mosque guide us on what we should do after these rallies? The problem is the Muslim leaders are not doing infaq. They're not offering solutions that are most effective and most needed by Palestinians. So I can share you an example, my personal experience in the city where I live. When Israel started bombing the Palestinians in early October, I approached 5 or 6 mosques and Islamic organizations, and I said, you know, we need to organize some protests. Either I got no response, or the responses I got were really pathetic, like, no, we're really worried about security concerns, or our lawyer told us we shouldn't get involved in this issue. So as a result of that, I had to turn to non-Muslims and some secular Muslims to organize for Palestine. And for about a month, we held protests every week. At first, there was just a few hundred coming, but by the 4th or 5th one, we had several thousand people attending our rallies. So at this point, the local mosques who have the deepest ties with like the FBI and who engage in dialogue and normalization with local Zionists, they stepped in to co-opt our efforts. And they said, now we're going to organize the next rally. So what kind of rally did they want to organize? From just the poster of the rally, you can figure out a lot. There was a heart on the poster with the American flag, and on it there was no mention of the word Palestine at all. Instead, it was called a peace rally. They wanted to neutralize the issue from the end of genocide and end of occupation to make peace. When some of us said imams who are normalizers with Zionists should not be leading the Palestinian cause, they stepped back, and now they are doing their work through the youth who they have recruited. In addition, the actions that they are offering are really useless and nearly useless. Like they say, call your representative, vote for this person, don't vote for that person. These are all tools offered by the oppressor that will never help the oppressed. So not only are the Muslim leaders offering ineffective actions, but those imams are trying to sabotage any real efforts made by Muslims that are trying to do something, such as disruption and direct actions. In the movement, rallies are good to get people together on the streets and find others who are willing to do the work. But after that, you have to move on.
We appreciate it. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for those thoughts. Selina Khan, independent journalist there from Nashville. Thank you. Moving on, Yemen's armed forces have seized several Israel-linked vessels in the Red Sea in response to the regime's genocide in Gaza. In a televised interview with Iran's Arabic news network, Al Alam, the commander of the Yemeni Coastal Defense Forces, Mohammad Al-Qadiri, says the Red Sea is safe except for Israeli ships and anyone that does business using ships of the Zionist regime.
We announced to the world, the international community, and the UN Security Council that the international passage of the Red Sea is safe and under our protection. And we do provide the security to the Red Sea, except for Israeli ships and anyone who does business using ships of the Zionist regime. The Red Sea and the Arabian Sea are completely safe. We are responding to the desperate calls of our brothers in Gaza and the Palestinian nation. We respond to the call of the women and children in Gaza who are under the threat of death and destruction on a daily basis before the eyes of the world. We as Muslims and Arabs respond to their calls. We have resisted, prepared ourselves, and are ready to defend Palestine. Even if Saudi Arabia, which used to attack us, comes under attack by any Israeli or American military force, we will defend it. This is about Islam, about being an Arab. Yes, even Saudi Arabia. With God's help, we will reach Al-Quds. Neither the Yemeni nation nor the Yemeni armed forces should be underestimated.
U.S. Senate Republicans have blocked an emergency spending bill aimed at providing billions of dollars in a new military assistance package for Ukraine and Israel. The vote was 49 in favor to buy 251 against. But 60 votes were needed in the 100-member Senate to begin debating the $110.5 billion package. The Republicans pressed their demand that U.S. home security should come first. They cited immigration control mechanisms at the Mexico border. Part of the new package would have provided nearly $50 billion in military and economic assistance for Kiev. It also allocated $14 billion of military assistance for Israel. The minority leader, Mitch McConnell, said the Senate needed to meet America's national security priorities. Iran's president says the issue of Palestine and the brutal aggression, Israeli aggression against Palestinians, will be top on the agenda during his official visit to Russia.
Another point which has turned into a concern for the region and the Muslim Ummah and all the freedom-seeking nations of the world. I'm referring to the ongoing developments in Gaza and what is happening to the innocent Palestinian people. So the issue of Palestine will be one of the major topics of discussion and the need for an immediate action for halting the bombardment of Gaza.
Raisi said lifting the years-long Israeli blockade on Gaza and providing support to the Palestinians will be among the top topics to be discussed. The president made the remarks before embarking on a day-long trip to Moscow, where he is set to meet with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin. And then Raisi said enhancing bilateral economic relations as well as energy and agricultural cooperation with Moscow will also be addressed during the meeting with Putin. The Iranian president has arrived in Moscow and will be officially received by his Russian counterpart later on Thursday. And that is it for World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The U.S. government and Biden are fully responsible for the renewed Zionist aggression on the Gaza Strip. By now, it has become increasingly clear that the real protagonist in this play is the U.S. regime, which is bent on eliminating the Palestinian resistance and displacing Palestinians, but to no avail. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, U.S. President Joe Biden's deputy Kamala Harris, speaking in Dubai recently during her West Asia tour, said many innocent Palestinians have been killed in the besieged Gaza Strip since October 7th, but hastened to add that the Israeli regime has a right to defend itself. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, addressing the Reagan National Defense Forum in Simi Valley, California, recently said Israel has a moral responsibility to protect Palestinian civilians while swiftly giving the regime a free license to kill those fighting the illegal racist occupation. Biden himself, although he doesn't know what he says, has also minced no words in recent weeks to project himself as the most Zionist American president ever, batting for the child-murdering regime. He has green-lighted the move to lift all restrictions on the regime's access to U.S. weapons stockpile. A report in the Wall Street Journal recently confirmed that Washington has delivered bunker buster bombs and an array of other lethal munitions to Tel Aviv regime for use against Palestinians. Biden's envoy for West Asia, David Satterfield, recently came up with the idea of a deconfliction mechanism for the besieged territory, which he has said would allow the regime to distinguish between UN aid workers and other Palestinians, basically saying that only UN officials have the right to survive. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, speaking recently during his whirlwind trip to Tel Aviv, reaffirmed Washington's support for the Israeli regime's so-called right to self-defense and urged it to avoid massive civilian losses in southern Gaza. He said the massive loss of civilian life and displacement of the scale seen in northern Gaza should not be repeated in the southern Gaza Strip, suggesting that the murderous campaign in Gaza can continue. While the United States and the Israeli regime have always been open about their intimate relationship, Biden and his administration have gone a step ahead, militarily, politically, and strategically. After the temporary truce expired and the Zionist regime resumed its indiscriminate bombings, the Hamas resistance movement categorically stated who was to be blamed for the deteriorating situation in the Gaza Strip, where the humanitarian crisis is rapidly worsening. It said in a statement, the U.S. administration and President Joe Biden bear full responsibility for the continuation of the Zionist war crimes in the Gaza Strip, after their absolute support for it, and the green light they once again granted following the visit of their Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, to the entity. The resumption of the aggression came just a day after Blinken visited the occupied territories. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine also held the U.S. government and Biden fully responsible for the renewed Zionist aggression on the Gaza Strip. By now, it has become increasingly clear that the real protagonist in this play is the United States regime, which is bent on eliminating the Palestinian resistance and displacing Palestinians, but to no avail. It was obvious back in October after Washington and some of its vassal states opposed a resolution at the United Nations General Assembly that called for the humanitarian truce in Gaza. By opposing the truce at that time, Americans essentially facilitated the regime's gruesome attacks on densely populated residential areas, refugee camps, hospitals, schools, and other civilian facilities. On the eve of Biden's visit to Tel Aviv in late October, an Israeli regime warplane pounded a hospital in the northern Gaza Strip, which killed more than 500 people, most of them children and women. Instead of condemning the genocidal act, the Zionist American president played the devil's advocate. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has repeatedly asserted in his speeches in recent weeks that the real mastermind of the carnage in Gaza is the United States. Ayatollah Khamenei stated in October, "Actually, it is the U.S. that is somehow managing the crime that is being committed in Gaza. The U.S. is the one that is managing things." Also, Iran's President Dr. Sayed Ebrahim Raisi and Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian repeatedly reminded the international community of America's direct complicity in what's unfolding in Gaza. President Raisi said at a joint presser with Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani recently, "The aid from the United States to the Zionist regime is encouraging them to kill and commit cruel acts of neglect against the Palestinian people." The fact that Iraqi resistance groups have intensified their operations against U.S. military bases in the region in recent weeks is because the liberation of Palestine begins with the expulsion of U.S. forces. The illegitimate regime in Tel Aviv cannot survive without the life support provided by the U.S., and its aggression on Gaza cannot be sustained if Americans pull the plug.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا O you who believe, اِسْتَعِينُوا بِالصَّبْرِ وَالصَّلَاةِ
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. So brothers and sisters, the discussion tonight, what is the meaning of karama based on a hadith of Ahlul Bayt, and what is its place in Islamic tarbiyah? Question number one. Number two, why do we say that karama, that Islamic dignity, Islamic self-worth, right now we're defining as that, is the result of the inner voice of the child being awakened? The inner voice of the child being awakened. Number three, in tarbiyah based on karama, right? If we're doing tarbiyah of our children based on karama, based on human Islamic dignity, right? How does this shape a child's moral compass? So as I said, right now, for now, we loosely define karama as dignity, Islamic self-worth, right? This is going to be based on a trait or a connection with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We're going to make sure our children don't feel like nobodies, but this is different. This is different to what we might find in the West. We might find some people who have a very strong sense of self, feel very important, are proud. That's different than karama, right? This is different than fancy degrees. It's different than money, right? This is going to be the result of the relationship between the abd and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, if we look in the school of Fatima, there's a definition. We're going to use the hadith later. I'm going to quote the hadith. But there's a definition. What's that definition that we're looking for? Karama is, when we use it in Islamic tarbiyah, it means that the person will possess noble moral traits, noble akhlaqi traits, and they will avoid behavior that is low, disgusting, and demeaning. Right? Actions, behaviors, states that are low action and demeaning, this person will avoid them because of the state of karama. When they're faced with an ugly action, a person who has karama would say, you try to pressure that person, force that person, get that person to make a mistake, do an action which is reprehensible, which Islam doesn't like. The person with karama would say, that action is beneath my dignity. Okay, let's look at the definition from the Ahlul Bayt. This first hadith is from Amirul Mu'mineen. So again, we're looking for ourselves. Do we have karama? What does the Imam say karama is? Al-karamu, right? So karama, Islamic dignity, Islamic self-worth. Al-karam, husnu sajiyya. It's noble akhlaqi traits, husnu sajiyya, wa ijtinabu daniyya. And that this person stays away from things which are dani, things that are low, things that are despicable. In Islamic tarbiyah, there's going to be two ways that we look at this. Remember now, our focus is on our children developing this state of karama. In this kind of method of teachings that we get from Sayyidah Fatima, the basis of our interactions, so this might be me as a sheikh, it might be our teachers and their interactions with children, it might be us as parents, it might be us as coaches, right? We're interacting with children. The basis and foundation for our interaction is going to be one where we're honoring our children and we're preserving their Islamic dignity. Now, Allah says that all human beings have been granted dignity. This is the ayat of Quran now. Surah Isra, Surah 17, verse number 70. Allah says this. وَلَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ. That we have honored, and certainly we have honored the children of Adam. Everyone has karama. Why do you and I get so worked up when we watch what's happening in Palestine? Why can't we bear to see what's going on in Nigeria? Why do we get infuriated when we see the prisons here in America treat people the way that people wouldn't treat pets? I have Quran. وَلَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمَ. Right? God honored all of the children of Adam, but not with children. With children, brothers and sisters, this is a right, not a favor. Raising children with dignity is a right that they have, not a favor. We do it قُرْبَةً إِلَى اللَّهِ. This is now a hadith from our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Our Prophet tells us this. Akrimu awladakum. Honor your children. Akrimu awladakum. Raise them with dignity. Wa ahsinu adabahum. And train them to have excellent adab and manners and interactions. If you do this, yughfar lakum. You will be forgiven. This is your responsibility. Now, in doing this, we're trying to make sure that we foster this sense of Islamic dignity and self-worth in the children. This means that our interactions with them are based on the idea that God has granted them karama. Right? So all of our actions, our interactions are like this. We don't want our child to think, from my interactions, you're a nobody. You're not important. There should be nothing demeaning about our interactions with children. But this also involves reverse engineering. What happens is, you and I are trying to get our children to be at a stage that by the age of 14, we're starting now, we're focusing from the time they're young, the time we're talking about now, the ages of 7, but we want by the age of 14, this adult to be someone who is Kareem, or someone who is a girl, Kareema, right? So we're looking for dignified children. What does that mean? So the first part was our interaction. The second part, the reverse engineering, what is the result that we're hoping to get from this proper training according to the School of Fatima? Our children will automatically, and without being forced, avoid ugly actions, avoid wrong behavior, right? They will ensure that they stay away from things which are low or detestable. They're going to interact with others with akhlaq and nobility because of that relationship with Allah. Now, I just want to give one example, and then after that, we're going to go slowly. We're trying to learn this properly, and of course, we want to affect ourselves first or change ourselves first. I want to give one example. The example, brothers and sisters, so let's say you have a father or a mother who's trying to raise a child to be a soldier of the imam. And I've noticed at the age of 7, so my child is 7 or older than 7, my child has a habit of lying. Lying. For a believer, a mu'min or mu'mina, they should sound the alarm. If they see that a child is lying, they should be concerned. What didn't I do when it comes to Islamic tarbiyah? Because according to the path of the Ahlul Bayt, the school of Sayyida Fatima, lying and faith can't go hand in hand. So this is alarm bells are going off in the heart of this mother or father. Hadith now. This is from Imam Baqir. So the hadith is this. He says, "Inna al-kadhib huwa kharabul iman." Lying is the destruction of faith. We're going to talk more about this later, because later, inshallah, we'll get to the hows and how do we do this, right? We're going step by step. We're just talking about, okay, what happens now? So many parents, you talk to them, they're dealing with children who sometimes lie to them, are not truthful, right? They're looking for reasons and ways to change this. What we're saying is that if a parent created a situation by ignoring the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt where the child formed a habit of lying. As an example, let's say when my child would tell me the truth, I would overreact. I would scream and shout. And my child, because of my behavior, learned to hide things. Learned to lie. That would be on me. Okay. So, but now, if we were looking for a cure, and again, we'll talk about the cure. We're going to go over these things slowly, step by step. But if we're looking for a cure, one of the things that we're going to learn from the Ahlul Bayt is that karama is the cure. If you can raise a child to have Islamic dignity based on that relationship with Allah, there's a whole laundry list of sins that the person won't commit. I'll give you one example, and then, because again, now is not the time for the hows. Let's introduce the topic properly. This hadith is from Amir al-Mu'mineen. This is what he says. Al-kadhibu wal-khiyana. So lying and treachery, betraying the trust, khiyana. He says, "Laysa min akhlaqil kiram." Noble people don't have this akhlaq. They're not like that. So if we're looking for a solution, One of the things is, have I raised these children so that they have karama? And then it's self-motivated.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Ali Munhali Hakim Mati. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
In the limelight.
The Western powers, including the US, the UK, France, Canada, and Germany, have established a powerful ecosystem that encompasses military, educational, economic, political, and media aspects. These nations exploit this ecosystem to make other countries dependent on them for their survival. The majority of the world's countries today operate within this ecosystem, which has the structural ability to facilitate the hegemonic agendas of the global 1% and the majority 99%. The Gaza genocide is a prime example of this phenomenon. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Palestinian issue is often portrayed as complicated by mainstream media. However, its roots can be traced back to the colonial settlement project of Zionism backed by the West. This project was launched by Western powers some 100 years ago, led by the UK and later the US, with the goal of dominating and annihilating the native Palestinian population. These Western powers have a long history of carrying out such onslaught across the world. However, what they were unable to comprehend was the unrelenting and unyielding resistance of Palestinians. Even after 100 years, with all the technological, material, and media power at their disposal, the sponsors of Zionism were completely dislodged in an unprecedented manner on October 7th. Think tanks in the West are still struggling to comprehend the dynamics and calculations that led to the Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, which took Tel Aviv and its backers by complete surprise. Let's examine some contemporary realities and what the new phenomenon in Gaza has revealed, especially in the past 7 weeks, until the temporary truce. Western political logic is unable to comprehend the basis of the unwavering commitment to the resistance of the Palestinian people. This is because they have rarely stood for the battle of values in their history. So their struggle to understand the resistance is not surprising. They will continue to have this struggle if they continue to look at the situation based on their limited material equations that operate within the paradigm of existing nation-state arrangements. Nation-states and their alliances are primarily driven by their short- and medium-term national interest, as perceived and pursued by the dominant forces of those nation-states. Such a political setup lacks the philosophical foundation to offer any hope, an arrangement where justice will prevail. Alternate political philosophies, like the one stated by Islam, in which global justice is given central importance, are the only hope for the oppressed people of the world. The current global political order and its institutions are inadequate in safeguarding the oppressed people worldwide. The nation-states that constitute these institutions have divergent motives and interests that are in direct conflict with fundamental human values and necessities. This describes the mindset behind the U.S. decision to veto an attempt made by the United Nations Security Council to bring about a humanitarian pause in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza earlier this month. The Western powers, including the U.S., the U.K., France, Canada, and Germany, have established a powerful ecosystem that encompasses military, educational, economic, political, and media aspects. These nations exploit this ecosystem to make other countries dependent on them for survival. The majority of the world's countries today operate within this ecosystem, which has the structural ability to facilitate the hegemonic agendas of the global 1% on the majority 99%. The Gaza genocide is a prime example of this phenomenon. This ecosystem can manage the UK's mass pro-Palestinian protest while delivering lethal genocidal weapons through premier delivery agents in person. It can also handle the anger of more than 2 billion Muslim populations to the point of suffocation and render their respective governments irrelevant and ineffective in taking any action in favor of Palestinians. This background helps us understand why countries such as Egypt and others continue to have political and trade ties with the Zionist regime, while condemning the regime's genocide in Gaza. Gaza has demonstrated the birth of a new phenomenon that shows how individuals and small groups can break free from the structural clutches of the hegemonic ecosystem and act on their own. The coordinated resistance from Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen has displayed hope for humanity and a bright future that awaits the oppressed people of the world. This new phenomenon is expected to grow rapidly as it aligns with the aspirations of the global 99% of people. The existing Western-sponsored ecosystem of exploiting other nations will face more and more resistance, and new political federations based on justice for all will emerge. Iran's decades-long struggle and sacrifices to survive outside this inhumane ecosystem have produced a resistant political model that is working and catching up.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is an issue of Islam regardless of being Arab or non-Arab. March 15th, 2009. 2 months ago, the Muslim Ummah gained another victory. That is the victory of the Palestinian resistance movement over their Zionist enemies in Gaza. That was a great and glorious victory. What victory can be more impressive than defeating a powerful army that had managed to defeat three powerful armies between 1967 and 1973? What could be more impressive than 22 days of futile efforts of a powerful army against the resisting youth and persistent soldiers of Gaza? The Zionist army was forced to retreat empty-handed. In addition, the Zionist regime and its supporters, especially the US, were disgraced in the world. They were publicly disgraced. That was a great victory for all Muslims. It led Muslims to a kind of unity. This time, they could not resort to the Shia-Sunni conflict. They brought up the issue of ethnicity this time. They started a debate arguing that the Palestinian issue was an Arab issue and that non-Arabs had no right to get involved in the issue. The Palestinian issue is an Islamic issue. It is not peculiar to Arabs or non-Arabs. If ethnicity was dragged into the matters of importance to the world of Islam, the greatest source of discord would be created. When ethnicity is dragged into the matters of importance to the world of Islam, Arabs, Iranians, Turks, Kurds, Indonesians, Malaysians, Pakistanis, and Indians will have to be separate from one another. What will remain of the Muslim Ummah if such a thing happens? Is it not a disaster for the Muslim Ummah and its collective capabilities? These are the machinations of arrogant powers, and unfortunately, some people in the world of Islam have fallen for these machinations. They do not want to let the sweet memory of the victories in Lebanon and Gaza remain in the minds of Muslims. They found that situation unpleasant, and therefore they thought up a source of discord to separate Muslims from one another.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Providing all-inclusive assistance to Palestinians and thoroughly supporting them is kafaya, obligation for Muslims. March 4, 2009. Our great community, with the blessing of the Islamic awakening, possesses tremendous power. The key to the solution of many of the problems of the Muslim countries lies in resoluteness and solidarity. The question of Palestine is the most urgent problem of the Islamic world. At times, some people are heard to say that Palestine is an Arab problem. What does that mean? If it means that there is a stronger feeling of consanguinity among the Arabs who are willing to offer Palestine a greater service and do more struggle for its sake, that is something desirable and we welcome it.
I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost, you guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.